Talk Radio 790 KBC, Peter Tillman at 10, continues hour number two. Brought to you by Sit and Sleep. Larry Miller, of course, will be anyone's advertised price, or your mattress is free. Coming up in just a bit, I'll give you a chance to see this insane show. Roger Waters, the Us and Them Tour at the Staples Center. Call as soon as I say the contest is on. And we'll play the Peter Tilden News Quiz and give you a chance to win those tickets. But the phones blow out, so get in early. Wanted to talk about what's going on in D.C. right now. Joining me is Yanni Applebaum, senior editor for politics at The Atlantic. Good morning.
Hey, nice to be with you.
So since last we spoke, a lot has gone on in Washington. A lot goes on every day. But because of the shooting yesterday, and then I saw it took about an hour and a half, by my count, to start politicizing it. The ball game is happening today, the congressional ball game. Is Washington sweeter, nicer today for a moment? Do you see any difference in the attacks from one side to the other, or an attempt to reach out?
Well, I think I can't overstate the extent to which Congress was really shaken by this. You talk to congressmen on the Hill that they will break off from mid-conversation to wipe away tears. I do think that there will be a slight calming of the rhetoric, at least in the short term. And the congressional baseball game itself has long been just about the best thing that happens in this town, a chance for people to connect in a way that doesn't involve politics. And so it'll be great to see that move forward tonight.
It's interesting, Yanni. I was talking to somebody who's been around politics for a long, long time. And I said, I think part of the problem is, like this ball game, when you get somebody out of Congress and you're not fighting them, you're playing ball and you're throwing them out, and you're hanging out in the dugout, or you're going out to dinner afterwards, you get a chance to kind of cut through all of that rhetoric and the nonsense and know them as a person. And it makes it harder then to really dislike them or even hate them. And I said politics used to be like that way back when, with the Tip O'Neill Reagan era. And they used to go to church together, they used to eat together, and they used to live in Washington more rather than travel around like they do now with fundraising. And the person that I told it to said, that's fantasy. It really wasn't like that. It was cutthroat back then. Do you have a sense of that at all, that part of the problem here is that these guys don't see each other a lot, they don't hang out a lot, and now we have this don't give in at all, these loyalty pledges, no one from the other side can have a good idea. It's just our ideas, and it's become that, and it's grown over the last couple of years with the help of social media, too.
Well, I think your friend's right not to romanticize the past, but to some extent there is a shift. Members do spend more time in the district and less time socializing with each other. But you'll find that even people who are very good personal friends in Congress can be ideological foes, and even if they're not personalizing the attacks on each other, they can really be savage about the policies that they oppose. One thing to bear in mind is that for something like 40 years, Congress was a Democratic, with a capital D, a Democratic institution dominated by the Democratic Party. It's easier to find ways to compromise if you're a Republican, you assume you're in the minority, you're a Democrat, you assume you're in the majority, and so you're going to find ways to work together and to form coalitions. Over the last 20, 25 years, Congress has switched back and forth from one party's control to another. It's really been at least as volatile as it's ever been in its entire history. And that means that the incentives are really large right now to hold out, to stall, to obstruct, and to hope that your party's going to retake control of the chamber. It's really hard to work out any kind of a compromise under those conditions, no matter how friendly you are with the guy across the aisle.
Well, and it is. It's also playing to constituents, too. You're worried about how you're going to be seen, how you're going to be portrayed back home. And we've seen these town hall meetings. I mean, healthcare is a great example. And if you can address that for a minute, I keep hearing stories that Mitch McConnell's trying to, behind closed doors, get this healthcare thing, whatever it's going to look like, patched together, pieced together by July 4th so they can make an announcement. Now, what has thrown a little bit of a monkey wrench into that is that the president came out the other day and the healthcare bill that the House put together, that they stood in the Rose Garden and everybody celebrated being able to put this thing together, even though it has an approval rating with the public of about 17%. The president has now said, you know, not happy with that. It's not generous enough. It's not good enough, nice enough. I don't remember the exact words. Does that blindside McConnell? And then what do they do about that if he said, I think it's too mean, I think is what he said.
Oh, I don't think it'll bother McConnell nearly as much as it bothers House Speaker Paul Ryan, who really asked his members to go out and take a hit for the team here. This is an incredibly unpopular bill with the public at large. We don't know what's in the Senate version. Presumably, it will be somewhat more moderate. And so McConnell is going to be able to swoop in here and say, hey, I took the unreasonable, mean bill, a bill even the president called mean, although McConnell would never say this out loud, and moderated it and made it more reasonable and somewhat kinder for the House and the members who took a hard vote on an incredibly unpopular bill and are facing the wrath of their constituents. And many of those constituents, unlike the president, have paid close attention to what's actually in this bill, whereas the president seems largely to be reacting to media coverage of it. That's going to be a lot harder for them, and many of them are going to feel betrayed by the president and the administration for having done what the president asked, just vote for the thing, and then to see the president turn around and badmouth the bill he himself had backed. That's a bitter pill to swallow for a lot of House Republicans, and they're not happy about it.
Well, and by the way, we don't know how much they're going to pay for the pill. At least, is the Senate going to wait for a congressional budget score, or are they going to put something out very quickly and not worry about that right away?
So they don't have the House's luxury of ignoring it. Under the procedural rules, this is being done under. They actually, procedurally, have to wait until the CBO scores the thing. So they've submitted it in secret to the CBO. Many senators say they haven't seen the bill. Even Republican senators, many of them haven't seen the bill. The public certainly hasn't seen it. But we'll get a CBO score in a couple weeks on this, and the Senate's going to need to have that in hand before they move ahead and try to ram the bill through. There really is, this has been a slow bipartisan slide over the last couple of decades toward increasing secrecy around major legislation. But this is something of a watershed. We've never seen a bill this important. With this little scrutiny.
Right. We don't get to hear it until it's kind of here we are, and people are going to celebrate it again. And then we're going to have to go through the weeds and figure out what's in it and who gets hurt, who gets benefits, how it changed. And we won't know that. They are shooting for July 4th, though, correct?
As of the moment, although all this is constantly subject to revision, if they hear back from the CBO something they don't expect, they may have to go back to the drawing room on this one. You know, the thing to bear in mind here is that this is an incredibly complicated topic with second and third order consequences that are really tough to game out and anticipate. And it's something that fundamentally affects the life of every American. It's why this has been so hard to fix. It's why every past health care reform has ended up angering a lot of people, because people are sort of perennially angry about the state of their health care. And so even if they manage to pass this bill, that's not the same thing as arriving at a solution that can endure sustained challenge. And so there's real peril for McConnell in going down this road. He's asking his members to vote on a bill that many of them won't fully understand, that may have consequences that cost them politically that they won't know about in advance.
Boy, you watch it and you say, why? But I guess they have, they must know their plan. Talking to Yanni Applebaum, and we're talking about July 4th. July 4th is supposed to be, I guess, is the eighth drop-dead date for Runtz Priebus, that he'll be out and there's going to be turnover in the cabinet. Don't know if that's true or false, but the latest rumor was that Jeff Sessions, the Attorney General, there were rumors a while ago, a couple weeks ago, that the president was unhappy with him for recusing himself, that he felt it led to the special counsel, the series of events. There are reports now from insiders that Sessions is not happy and would like to resign, but he's being asked not to because of the optics at this point. What are you hearing?
Well, this is a problem for the president, which is that he has submitted so few names to the Hill for the more than 1,000 critical positions he's got to nominate people for, and put so few people in place. And now that there is a criminal probe, apparently, of the president himself for obstruction of justice, he's going to have an awfully hard time finding anyone to take these jobs. It's been very good for the job security of Reince, of Sean Spicer, of Jeff Sessions. The president can dismiss anyone he wants, but may not necessarily be able to find a fully qualified replacement or be able to get them through the Senate. And so for all of his dissatisfaction with the performance of critical aides, like Sessions, he so far has been, for the most part, asking them to stay rather than encouraging them to leave.
And speaking of that, where's Jared Kushner? I haven't heard his name mentioned in quite some time.
Well, he doesn't like to talk to the press a whole lot. You'll usually hear about Jared either through positive leaks that come from his staff who are trying to counter some sort of narrative that's out there, or from other senior staffers in the White House who are infighting. Lately, he's been mostly focused on this group he set up within the White House to bring innovation to government. And so that's where the story's been focused. It's not where the media's attention mostly is, although they did release a report of sorts earlier this week on some of the ideas, like burying the Northeastern rail system underground to create a high-speed rail network in the Northeast. They're thinking, they're trying to think really out of the box, some would say pie in the sky, and figure out if they can revolutionize government services. But that has led to somewhat lower profile since the president's foreign trip.
Yeah, not hot profile at all. Yanni Applebaum is the senior editor for politics at The Atlantic, and you talked about Mueller expanding the investigation. So the report was that when Comey testified in the Senate hearing that he believed he was fired because of the Russian investigation, he also testified he told Trump he was not under investigation. And this goes on now, and Sessions testified, and everybody thought, wow, Sessions held up pretty well under testimony. But now you hear that Mueller is expanding to see if the potential is there for obstruction of justice. Talking to legal experts, they're saying based on what they've heard and they know, it doesn't appear that there's obstruction of justice. That doesn't mean that Mueller's not going to dig deeper and talk to intelligence officials to find out what went on, how Sessions responded. And in Sessions' testimony, he stuck mainly to the first story, which is that his memo, that Rosenstein's memo with his suggestion was the reason that Comey was dismissed and had to do with Hillary's emails. He's completely disregarding the fact that the president went on TV then and said it was because of other things, the Russian investigation. He had decided to do it long before that. Does that weigh into this? Have they dug themselves a hole where this would not have happened except for the protestations or some of the stuff that happened during the appearances in front of the Senate committee?
If you take the president at his word that there was no collusion that he was involved in between his campaign and Russia, that there was no collusion at all between the campaign and Russia, then that's exactly what he is saying. What the president's public story is at this point is that he created this problem for himself, that by, in his rage at Comey for refusing to publicly announce that there was no investigation, which led to his firing Comey, or at least was a contributing factor there, he has, in fact, created the investigation that he wanted Comey to deny. And that's actually a real problem for him. It's not clear what evidence Mueller is looking at or the basis on which he might be investigating the president for obstruction of justice. A lot of this is extremely cloudy with few clear precedents. It's not even clear that you can criminally prosecute a president who's in office or that a president legally terminating a subordinate could be charged with obstructing justice. But now that probe is active and ongoing, and it's going to create all sorts of problems, not least because it leads Mueller into a variety of other potential areas of investigation that Trump clearly didn't want him exploring. Also, in that Times report and in a Wall Street Journal report last night, was mentioned that Mueller's investigators are now examining financial ties and accounts, looking to see if associates of the president received a payoff from Russia. Those are unconfirmed reports. That's what the Times and the Journal have said at this point. But if that's the case, that's troubling, even if the payments aren't there. Very few businessmen want federal investigators rummaging through their financial records.
No kidding.
There are all sorts of things that can turn up in that process. One thing we know about special counsel investigations is they often start looking at one thing and end up filing charges on something wholly unrelated. So if Trump, in fact, by firing Comey, first sparked the appointment of a special counsel and then sparked a criminal investigation of his own conduct in that firing, then you'd have to regard this as one of the most enormous own goals of all time.
Well, and the other thing is that with a Republican Congress, there's no chance that this president's going to be up for an impeachment. I mean, he's got friendly faces all around. He should at this point just back off, not tweet about it, not talk about it, and just get to the business of doing business, because whatever Mueller digs up or finds out, it's going to be very, very hard to get this Congress to move forward against this president, I would think, so that he again continues to hurt himself with the tweeting. And I'm sure, I know there are a lot in his party who are just hoping he would stop, because it adds fuel to the fire.
Most of his staff is begging him to stop, is terrified of what he'll tweet each morning, and they too would like him to focus. You know, they've set up Infrastructure Week, Workforce Week, ways of getting the president to focus on his agenda that won a majority of the Electoral College, the agenda that he went to Washington to implement. They'd like him to be talking about that and not about Mueller or the investigation. They'd like to refocus the political conversation around that agenda. So far, it hasn't worked, and their own worst enemy in trying to refocus the conversation has been the president and his tweeting. So, yes, they're quite hopeful that they can weather this storm. They look at a Republican Congress. The only times that Congress has ever seriously moved to impeach a president have been both when they see impeachable misconduct, but also the second prerequisite has been every time the president has been obstructing the legislative will of the majority of the legislature. That's not yet the case here.
Right.
Maybe this will be the exception to that rule, but so far at least the White House has good reason to think that they can weather this if only they can keep the president from digging the hole deeper.
Hey, Yanni, before we go with 30 seconds left, are they talking to Dennis Rodman? I know he's over there as an independent for Potcoin, a way to pay for your pot purchases online because he's got the T-shirt on all the time. But he's over there. He handed the art of the deal to a high-ranking official in Kim Jong-un's government. What is expected there? And are there back channels, you think? I would assume if you're the government, you want to know what Rodman's doing and have some conversation with him, although it appears the optics are that they're not.
Well, Rodman's the kind of guy who gives State Department officials ulcers. He's out there freelancing foreign policy that the North Koreans, who had apparently in any case been moving toward repatriating an American who is held there, used Rodman's visit as a way to do that. They like to do that to sort of taunt the American administration and show that formal diplomacy yields fewer returns than this kind of obsequiousness. But I can't tell you for sure whether Rodman will be debriefed when he gets back. You'd have to think that State Department and various intelligence services would like to know what he knows. But I can't tell you whether the worm will turn toward him.
And are we attributing the release of the students in the coma to this administration? I mean, I think the dad was talking about the fact that the Obama administration let him down, and this administration actually reached out and cared and made a difference and is asking for the release of the other political prisoners.
Well, you know, all of these talks are always classified and hard to report on. This is something the Obama administration was working on. It did not secure the release. Whether that's because the Trump administration took this more seriously or whether North Korea, for its own calculus, now sees the release as more advantageous, I really regret. I can't say with any certainty. But usually when North Korea does make a move like this, they're doing it really in the furtherance of their own agenda and has less to do with our politics than we might like to think.
Gotcha. Yanni Applebaum, thanks for coming on. Senior editor of politics at The Atlantic. The website, of course, is theatlantic.com/politics, and his Twitter is at Y Applebaum, Applebaum. And I thank you for taking the time to talk to us.
Oh, always a pleasure.
Take care, Yanni. Have a great weekend. Coming up, we're going to talk about some other stuff that's in the news. The golf, Phil Mickelson withdrew from the Open, and I'll tell you why that's kind of a big deal. Gene Simmons ticking people off. And a bunch of other news stories. Also, the Megyn Kelly thing. More backlash about her having Alex Jones on the show Sunday night. MSNBC, NBC are really, I hear it's crazy time within their headquarters there at 30 Rock, trying to figure out, do they run it? Do they not run it? Are they going to lose more advertisers? Should they shine a light on this guy? And also, one of the dads whose kids was killed at the massacre, Sandy Hook, that Alex Jones says was fraudulent, that they had actors and it was fake, is answering the question of whether Alex Jones should be on or not be on, and which of those choices do you think he chose? Should he be featured or should he not be featured? I'll discuss that when Peter Tilden at 10 continues right after this. Oh, yeah, you'll hear this song if you go see Roger Waters in the Us and Them tour at the Staples Center. How would you do that? You can call right now at 800-222-5222 and say you want to play the Peter Tilden News Quiz. And if I pick you, you win the tickets if you know most of the answers and get them right. So do that, 800-222-5222. A couple things that I want to talk about. I burst at the seams to get everything into the show. But we're just talking to Yanni Applebaum about the fact that the probe into the Russia probe has now expanded into the fact that obstruction of justice may enter into the Mueller probe and the business ties, the Trump organization or associates that Trump has worked with or knows or in the campaign, they're looking at their ties. I got to tell you, if anybody wants to respond to this, it's interesting because I know some, I'm from the East Coast, I'm from Philadelphia, and I know some people I got friendly with out here whose families were quite major in building construction real estate. And I don't want to, be too specific here, but my understanding is if you're a major player in New York real estate or in New York construction, that you have to have ties to the mob and you have to have ties to the Russian mob. For instance, if you own a hotel, you're only getting your laundry and your garbage taken away if you use certain people. If you're doing construction, you have to use certain people. I remember reading a story in the New York Times that somebody, a mogul in New York, celebrated when a major mob figure came out of prison. They threw him a coming out party. And I thought, why? Why would this guy, I mean, this is a credible, big-time name in New York, why would they be throwing a mobster a coming out party? And I remember asking somebody, and they looked at me. It was, when you're from the East Coast, it says, what are you, dumb? What are you, stupid? Yeah, you have to work with those people because there are still industries in New York and New Jersey that are controlled by certain folks that make sure that if you don't use them, things may happen to you or the family or the building. So if they investigate Trump and his business ties, I'm guessing being in the New York real estate world, if that's the norm, if that's who you have to do business with, it looks like that will probably come up that there's Russian money there, Russian oligarchs, Russian guys who do or mob guys who do your roofing. And when I say roofing, I'm talking about on skyscrapers and stuff. So tell me if I'm wrong, 800-222-5222. But that was my understanding since I was a little kid, that if you're doing major construction and the casinos down there, when they're doing the construction of those casinos, they don't just pick the best carpet guy and the best carpenter. I think you kind of get told in some ways who you're picking. And if you say no, animal heads may appear out of nowhere all of a sudden in your in your bed. So interesting. I just wanted to throw that out there. Megyn Kelly, I also wanted to mention that this just keeps going. Social media is just slamming her. And now Tom Brokaw had this to say about putting Alex Jones on.
Because the whole game is to, let me play gotcha. Let me show you how meaner I can be. There's a lot of controversy around this network about Alex Jones, for example. But the fact is that he is an unalloyed racist, a man who's out there pulling the pin on the grenade every day, and he has 6 million viewers who are paying attention to him. Yep. And the parents, Newton at Newtown, are saying they're hearing from his followers all the time. They buy into what he is saying, which is patently not true. So at some point, there's got to be a coming together of the political culture. It's never going to be kumbaya. We don't expect that, because out of that tension can come good things. But I don't remember in my lifetime, and I'm a pretty good student of history, when this country was at its loggerheads with such great consequences that can result from all of this.
By the way, first thing is, wow. I know that Brokaw used to talk, he had that thing going on, but I don't know if he had a stroke or something was going on there, but that his speech really got strange there. So Alex Jones, if you listen to him and you like him, okay, you're getting something out of that. Remember, the one thing, the big pushback now is that if Sandy Hook was really faked, that would mean you have all of the victims, all of the parents, all the police, all the first responders. Everybody was an actor. Everybody kind of got paid to throw into this. For the gun cartel, that's pretty nuts. And then what you look at, if you stand back a bit, is going, wow, you exploited that, and you exploited people who lost their kids and this tragedy for money, so you could talk about it and get listeners. Interestingly, and maybe I'll read the letter from the dad. We wanted to get him on, but he said, I don't want to do this right now. I just don't want to go on radio and talk about it, and I completely honor that because he lost his kid. But he said Alex Jones makes a living peddling conspiratorial or rhetoric and anti-government propaganda. And he went on to say that he's had harassment, torment, and threats, and so have the other parents, because the hoaxers that are out there perpetuate this. And then the parents get, imagine you lost your son, and now you're getting threats at your house, etc. He feels, however, that they should put him on, that he's newsworthy, because the president has mentioned him. He may even get press credentials at some point. But he said no amount of public outrage is going to turn the media's attention away from him and his delusional conspiracy theories. Put him on. Let him talk in an open forum. Just hit him. Ask him the tough questions so that he has to answer them so people can see what he's about. But this father is not against, necessarily against, Alex Jones being given the airtime, as long as Megyn Kelly does a good job interviewing him and asking him the tough questions. Alex Jones, as you heard, is now saying that she's taking stuff out of context, and he has tapes of everything, so he can show you this out of context, and she promised she wouldn't talk about the Sandy Hook thing, that she would just do it peripherally, and I'm thinking, why? If that was something that you believe, why shouldn't she talk about it? And then, of course, the other issue is the fact that during his trial for his kids, to get, I guess, either the part-time or full-time custody of the kids, his attorney pointed out that he was just playing a role. So, you know, should he be blocked from being on? I don't care. I really don't care. I just hope she does a good job interviewing, because people emailed me and said, hey, you talked about it, but I didn't get your take on it. My take is, sure, let it go. Interview him, but ask him the tough questions. Try and show who he is and what he's all about. If you haven't noticed, by the way, just a small, small change. I bet Dino doesn't have any idea about this. Did you know that Fox has changed something major? You ready? Fox has stopped using Fair and Balanced. They don't use it anymore. They don't have it in their logos. They don't have the people saying it all. They have changed their shtick there. New York Magazine reporter and former Roger Ailes nemesis Gabriel Sherman said on the change Wednesday, the decision was actually made last year, not long after Ailes was forced out, because it tied in to the Ailes era, the Fair and Balanced slogan. So they're not using Fair and Balanced anymore, which is, I didn't even notice that was going on. I think only one person was using it. Brett Baer was still using it. So now they've switched to most watched, most trusted. So a subtle change, but a change nonetheless. A couple other things in the news that I wanted to mention. And by the way, a couple lines still, 800-222-5222, if you want to get the Roger Waters tickets. We'll do the news quiz in just a minute. But is Phil Mickelson not the greatest dad in the world? How do you even compete with this? Phil Mickelson withdrew from the U.S. Open because he realized there was no chance to get from his daughter's high school graduation in California to make his tee time in Wisconsin. This is the first time that this man has missed the U.S. Open since he didn't qualify in 93, and his first missed major since the 2009 Open. But what a role model. So he was holding out the fact that there would be storms and there may be a four-hour delay, and that he could watch his daughter graduate, get in a private jet, fly across country, and be at the Pacific Ridge School in Carlsbad, California, and still make the Open. Instead, the Open started under really sunny skies. There's hardly any threat of bad weather. So Mickelson, who holds the U.S. Open record with six runner-up finishes, only major keeping him from the career Grand Slam, could have done it and said to his daughter, sweetie, honey, you know what? Daddy, this is very important for Daddy. This is what Daddy does. This can make Daddy and you and Mommy a ton of Rolex endorsement money. But yet, what did he do? He said, my daughter's graduation is more important than me potentially winning the U.S. Open. Women everywhere right now are gushing, going, why aren't you like Phil Mickelson? Oh, you want me to play golf 14 hours a day every Sunday and Saturday? Okay. He said, it's the tournament that I want to win the most. The only way to win is if you play and have a chance. But this is one of the moments when you look back on life and you just don't want to miss it. I'll be really glad that I was there and present at his daughter's graduation. So good for him, man, prioritizing your life. Although it's one of those cases where you say, you know, when you look back in your life and you're on your deathbed, what would you think? I may think, I can't believe that graduation was horrible. I had to listen to all these other kids' parents and stay there. It was horrible, horrible. Signing autographs. I should have gone to the U.S. Open. A couple other pieces of business before we do the contest in a moment. The Walenda, you know the Walenda family? These are the famous people who fall off of high wires, and they're like the best high wire act in the world. Well, the daughter, I guess, is a trapeze artist. And you got to hear what she said, though. She's a daredevil, and what she just did, and the only reason I'm doing the story was the number one story on Twitter this morning when I came in. She hung by her teeth from a helicopter this morning over Niagara Falls. why you get up in the morning and go, I want to do that. This is the thing I want to do better than anybody else. I guess because you got the Walenda gene. Anyway, she did it. But the great thing she said was, so she did it, and then she gave a news conference, and she said, I hope this is a message for young girls. You can do anything a guy can do with a little more grace. That is a role model. A woman who hung from her teeth from a helicopter just kind of makes me laugh that girls will look up to her. But she says, never give up your dreams. And I think the other message there that she forgot is always brush and floss and make sure that your teeth are in really good shape. Because guess what? If your teeth aren't good, you're in Niagara Falls. And then the last story, the one that kind of got me, is Gene Simmons from Kiss. And it's so funny, during the break, Steve said, are you going to talk about the Gene Simmons thing? Gene has been coming on this show. I haven't seen him in ages. Since he started doing his reality show, and he's a character. You know Kiss. You know how big they are. Gene is a marketing machine. He carries a book around with him, writes down every single idea, and does business deals everywhere. And he's a really, really tough businessman. Well, he is trying to trademark the devil horns gesture. You know, where you turn in your two middle fingers, put the thumb and forefinger out, and either leave your thumb out or your thumb in. The fact that not only that Ronnie James Dio had been doing it for 8 million years, the fact that American Sign Language with the thumb out means I love you, so they've been doing it for quite a long time. John Lennon did it. Spider-Man kind of shoots his web out that way and has been doing it forever. The Hook'em Horns, the University of Texas at Austin, been doing it quite a long, long time. And I think this dates back hundreds of years. It's probably biblical times they were doing that. But Gene is trying to do it. As a symbol from Rock On, because he says, I guess he thinks he invented it. And by the way, if you have an Italian grandmother, I think you've seen it also in the house, right, Dino? The horns? Isn't that an Italian thing? I saw that growing up. So he says he's going to do it. It'll be really interesting to see if he can get that trademark. I would lose all faith in mankind if he can. Gene also co-ops things. He came on my radio show years ago, and I used to open with guests to try and discern if they have a sense of humor or not. I used to, and I did it with Norman Schwarzkopf, the first guest I ever did. I was nervous about him, and I wanted to know within 30 seconds if he had a sense of humor or not. And I said, you know, sir, I'm nervous about you because you're a handsome and powerful man. And then it went on from there, and I got a sense of him. And I started using that with everybody. You're a handsome and powerful man. I did it with Gene Simmons. And now every interview you'll ever read for the rest of your life, or every interview he ever does with anybody, when he greets you, he says, you're a handsome and powerful man. So he co-ops things, and then I think believes in his head that he actually created it. Yes, Engineer Steve.
Also, Peter Tilden was the inventor of bad hair day.
See, now, it's funny you say that. You know that because I came up with that a long, long time ago because my brother used to say I'm in bed with a bad haircut. And I put it in an episode of Major Dad that I wrote years ago. But I don't tell people that because you look like you're a load if you tell people I came up with the bad hair day thing. But when I was here with Tracy Miller a million years ago,
right,
we had bad hair day hats because my hair is all, so I wear a hat all the time.
You have a constant bad hair
day. I have a constant bad hair day. My hair is going, but I remember the one I was most proud about that never was marketed or won was a Verhoeven soap on a rope that you only use it in the shower for your Verhoeven's. So that, because when I use the soap in the shower, I never know where my wife ended up with the soap. How do I know that she's going top to down? And it ended up in an area where the sun don't shine. And now I come in and I start top down and I'm putting that in my face. Okay. So if you know that it's just for your Verhoeven's, it hangs in the shower and it's only Verhoeven soap. People know what it is. There's no confusion there. You only use it on your Verhoeven's. You don't use it on your hair or your face or whatever. And I thought that was a heartbreaker for me, Steve. I thought that was the one that was going to be big.
Okay. Now I think you're crazy.
Thank you very much. Talk Radio 790 KBC coming up. We'll play the Peter Tilden News Quiz next for tickets to go see Roger Waters. It's the Us and Them tour. He's going to play, I think, 75 or 80% old stuff, Pink Floyd stuff, and a bunch of stuff from the new album. It's at the Staples Center June 20th, 21st, and 27th, and I got a pair of tickets for the June 27th show. So 800-222-5222. We'll pick somebody to play next. All right, Pink Floyd, Roger Waters, Us and Them tour. Huge tour. You should see what the graphics look like, the visuals that go along with not only the classic Pink Floyd songs, but his new music, his new album. Let's go. The phones are all lit up. Let's go to William in Orange County. William, you're on Talk Radio 790 KBC. Good morning.
Hey, Tilden. I did hear the story about you being the originator of bed hair.
Bad hair.
Well, actually, the other rumor I had was you were the inspiration for the big psychedelic hit, Whiter Shade of Pale by Procol Harum.
Yeah, if you've seen me, you can white balance on my back. I look like Large Kurt.
Well, do you know who told me that?
Who?
Doug McIntyre, whose head looks like the onion in the bottom of my martini.
Well, I like you already. What do you do for a living, William?
Well, I help people who have anger issues.
Oh, okay. All right. Well, so here we go. Hopefully you won't have an anger issue. You got to listen carefully. You know how to do this. It's multiple choice or true and false. You get it mostly right. You got to see Roger Waters and the us, and them tour. Here we go. The leader of what nation mocked Donald Trump in a speech on Wednesday? Was it California, eh? Was it Australia or was it Norway? California, Australia, or Norway?
Well, I think California's not a nation yet.
Good.
I think it was Australia, maybe.
Australian Prime Minister Malcolm Turnbull mocked his U.S. counterpart in a speech Wednesday night to a gathered crowd of journalists and politicians. And I'll play it for you later on the Top 6 at 6. Musician Neil Young announced today that after doing this for 30 years, he would no longer A, smoke pot every 18 minutes, B, host the Bridge School benefit concert, or C, wear sideburns. Is it pot, the Bridge School, or wear sideburns?
I think it's B.
It is. Since 86, proceeds from the annual concerts held at the Shoreline Amphitheater benefited the Bridge School, whose educational programs serve kids with severe physical disabilities. And I know his kid has severe disabilities. I wonder why he's not doing anymore. All right, continue.
Well, if he stopped smoking pot, that's fake news.
Yeah, there you go. And if he got rid of those sideburns, that's most of his hair. So what manufacturer announced that it's cutting 2% of its workforce? Was it Caterpillar? Was it Apple? Or was it Nike? Caterpillar, Apple, or Nike?
Well, since we got to build the wall, I think it would be Nike.
It's Nike. Nike is cutting about 2% of its workforce as the athletic brand revamps global operations. United Airlines flight nearly took off with what this week? A, a gremlin sitting on the right engine. B, jet fuel gushing out the left wing. Or C, 215 highly disgruntled passengers. Is it A, gremlins, B, jet fuel, or C, 215 highly disgruntled passengers?
I think the gremlin was the Twilight Zone, so I'm going to go with B.
You're very right. Twilight Zone, I think, was the big episode of that. It was gushing out of the wing at Newark Airport as we're about to take off for Italy. You, my friend, are going to stand in line and get a pair of tickets for Roger Waters' Us and Them Tour, courtesy of us and them. And Dino will give you the tickets, and I'm going to sit here and wait, because in a minute, I'm going to be joined by Dr. Drew right here on Talk Radio 790 KBC.